by the CME Group. Dateline, Chicago, September 1st. As we end a trading week just ahead of a four-day trading week and start a new month on trading the markets from Wall Street to the plains. Max Armstrong, along with yours truly, Orion Samuelson, and we're going to be visiting with Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue a little bit later in the program. We had a great time with him, a brief time, but a great time Wednesday at the Farm Progress Show in Decatur, Illinois, and I like him, and you'll hear some thoughts from the Secretary as he visited with Max and me at Farm Progress. But let's begin by taking a look at the story on Wall Street as we ended this trading week. Wall Street moved modestly higher because of a jobs report that kept expectations muted for another interest rate hike this year, while investors kicked off a typically slow month for stocks on a positive note. U.S. job growth slowed more than expected in August after two straight months of hefty increases. The Labor Department said today that non-farm payrolls increased by 156,000 last month. Economists had expected an increase of 180,000. And after that employment data today, traders were betting on a 39% chance the Federal Reserve would raise rates at its December meeting, similar to bets earlier in the week, according to the CME Group's FedWatch tool. One economist in New York said the latest economic data that came out today didn't provide information to the Fed that they need to go out and raise interest rates. That was Chuck Carlson, officer at Horizon Investment Services in Hammond, Indiana. He went on to say the data kind of continued to show this Goldilocks-type situation, which the market tends to like. Not too hot, and it's not too cold. So, looking at those closing numbers on Wall Street today, the Dow up 39 points to end at 21,987. The S&P 500 gained 4.9 points, well, call it 5, to 2476. And the NASDAQ composite added 6 points, ending the week at 6435. But during the trading session today, the Dow again traded above the 22,000 level. And the other note here is that for the week, the S&P rose 1.3%. The Dow added nearly 1%, but the NASDAQ had its best week of 2017, gaining 2.75% in today's market. The S&P did stay near all-time highs as major stock indices marked gains for a second straight week, and the NASDAQ tallied that record closing high after minting its best week of the year. Shares of major automakers climbed after the companies reported better-than-expected August sales and issued some optimistic outlooks as they expect Houston-area residents will be replacing cars and trucks after Hurricane Harvey. General Motors rose 2.2%. Ford Motor gained 2.9%. Another stock that caused some attention today, Lululemon Athletica shares up a little more than 7% after the yoga and leisure apparel maker reported profit and revenue that topped expectations. So that's a look at what happened today. But while I mentioned that automobile sales report today, I frequently like to take a look at the monthly reports to see which vehicles sell the most during the month. Not going to go through the entire list, but the top 20 selling vehicles in August, we love our pickups, friends. The number one seller, Ford F-Series, up 15%. Number two, Chevy Silverado, up 4%. The Toyota RAV4, made a big jump during the month, 30% increase in sales, and that was followed by the Ram, back to the pickups again, but the Ram sales were down 6.6%. Rounding out the second of the top 10, Toyota Camry up 12.7%, Honda Civic up 11%, Honda CR-V up 15%, Honda Accord down about 0.3%. And let's go back to that Honda CR-V. Its sales down 15%. And then rounding out the top 10, Chevrolet Equinox, and it gained 85% in sales during the month of August. So it's a four-day trading week. What do we watch? What do we look for in the coming week? Well, we'll return from a long Labor Day weekend refreshed, ready to buy. The day after the holiday, the S&P 500 gained 0.1% on average between 1980 and 2016, according to the Stock Traders Almanac. But that's where the optimism typically ends. September as a whole is the worst month in the year for stock performance, with the S&P falling on average 0.5%. And this September could be particularly nail-biting. Wall Street may be facing a tough ride if there is a showdown in Washington over the U.S. budget and the federal debt ceiling. Meanwhile, the North Korea situation is a concern, as is the impact of Harvey. Wednesday of next week, the Federal Reserve issues its latest report on the health of the U.S. economy. The central bank expected to hold rates steady at its next meeting in 2 weeks' time, but announced that it will begin reducing its $4.5 trillion balance sheet. Policymakers have increasingly begun to fret about weak inflation, and the so-called beige book should detail whether prices for goods and wage growth look like accelerating over the coming months. Meanwhile, the Commerce Department likely to report a trade deficit of $44.6 billion for July on Wednesday. Trade deficits in June, $43.6 billion. On Thursday, the data on non-farm productivity for the second quarter expected to be revised to 1% from 0.9%. So that's some of what we're looking at. Not much in earnings reports. We've pretty well taken that down to the end of this quarter. Although truck and engine maker Navistar International expected to report an increase in third quarter profit on Wednesday compared with a loss a year earlier, that's helped by improving heavy truck orders in the U.S. Investors will look for an update on the full-year financial forecast. And the House of Representatives, this is an interesting one to watch, will vote Wednesday on a sweeping proposal to speed the deployment of self-driving cars without human controls and will bar states from blocking autonomous vehicles. That vote in the House on Wednesday will be watched carefully by computer companies and by the automobile industry. It'll be watched carefully by me, too. I don't think I'm ready to be on an expressway in Chicago surrounded by driverless vehicles. But we will see. This week, we were at Farm Progress Show in Decatur. Max and I were there, and we had the opportunity in front of a full tent at the ADM display to sit down with Secretary of Agriculture, Sonny Perdue. He was there. I'm going to be talking about his visit, and Max and I had the opportunity to sit down and visit with the Secretary and get his feeling on NAFTA, on trade agreements, on the Farm Bill, and whatever else he's been hearing on his tours, his RV tours around the country. This weekend, well, ahead of the weekend, he again did another RV tour, this one in the northeastern part of the United States, driving the RV. Well, he doesn't drive. He has a driver for that, of course. But they're going around to rural communities to get the sense and the feeling of what farmers would like to see in the farm bill and what they don't like about current farm policy in the U.S. So stay with us. We'll share that visit with you when we continue on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need, today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Welcome back to The Markets. And again, this week at Farm Progress Show, not only the Secretary of Agriculture, but the chairman and ranking Democrat on the House Agriculture Committee were on board to conduct their own farm bill listening session. But then Secretary Perdue was all over the grounds, and one of the stops he made was at the ADM tent. That's where Max Armstrong and I hung out for the duration of the Farm Progress Show. And at noontime, I'm glad it was air-conditioned, because even though we had ideal weather, certainly not August weather for the Farm Progress Show, but it would have gotten very warm in that ADM tent without the air conditioning that they provided. But Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue joined us on stage, sat down with us, and Max Armstrong started the visit with this question.
Have you been getting an earful from farmers?
Well, I have, but it's always a good earful because it's authentic, and I identify with that. But I want to tell you guys what an honor it is to be with the Harry Carries of Farm Broadcasting here today.
Thank you for saying so. You were out, certainly, on your tour not many days ago, and you had to have a lot of concerns expressed. What would have been the top two? Trade has to be a big one, right?
Trade, and obviously still anxiety about NAFTA and about Korea free trade agreements. Obviously, trade is one of the utmost things. We're blessed in this nation, blessed in an industry where we can produce more than our country needs. We don't have to import those needs. So that's a blessing on one hand, but we have to get rid of it. And that's one of our goals. That's why we created the Undersecretary for Trade, and every day is going to get up thinking, where can I sell U.S. products today?
Can you give us any reassurance about NAFTA? I've talked to some folks this morning quite nervous about it, Mr. Secretary.
I'd love to give you some assurance. We're just in the second round now. Hopefully we can get this over by December. Mexico certainly wants to get it done by December. I think everyone would like to get a deal. The president's very concerned about trade deficits, particularly in auto and auto manufacturing south. He fully understands the what we have on the line in agriculture. Early on, I was able to demonstrate that, what it meant to U.S. farmers. So he's very mindful of that, but it's a huge balance across the overall economy. I'm hoping we can get it done to the satisfaction of our ag industry.
How much, Mr. Secretary, are you hearing about crop insurance and its importance?
I think when the 2014 Farm Bill came in with the crop insurance program, everybody understood it would be a great safety net, and it's proven that to be. Now, you don't look any further than the sad situation in Texas and Louisiana right now to understand. Farmers in this area understand 2012 how important it was. So we need to maintain a good basis, a good crop insurance program going forward in the 18 Farm Bill. I think Congress understands that. And certainly Chairman Roberts and Chairman Conaway, the chairs of our agricultural committees, understand that. And I think you'll see there are a few changes that need to be made. We hope there'll be improvements and not impediments again, and make crop insurance an even more vital part of the farm safety net. I call it the food security safety net for America, because when you have devastation like we've had in Texas, you say, well, it's only a certain percentage of the crop. But for a farmer, it may be 100% of theirs, and they may not be able to farm again without crop insurance there. And I don't think Congress wants to get into the supplemental disaster program year after year. That's a painful decision for them to make. We think crop insurance, where producers participate in that, is the appropriate way to go. The public understands insurance as well.
I have really liked what you're doing with young people, FFA, and so what brings you to that part of the Secretary's job, making it easier for young people to get into farming?
Well, again, they're critical. When you look at the age of our demographics of our farmers today, we see an aging generation. Farming is a tough business, first of all. It's a high-risk business with a high barrier of entry. We've got to make it easier and more convenient for young people to get in it. It's not the lack of interest. It's not the lack of energy. It's not the lack of desire. We've got to help to alleviate and remove those barriers. USDA wants to be a part of that. But I've also encouraged young people interested in agriculture to aspire to your guys' jobs. We need good ag communicators for the future. We've lost the battle on some public sector battles about labeling and naming and those kind of things based on that great research and technology that we have in agriculture. We just haven't communicated it very well. We have not gotten out here and told the great story. So I need young people who also want to tell that great ag story for the future so people can understand how blessed we are in a nation to have the safest, most abundant, most nutritious food supply anywhere in the world.
It's a case where technology got here first, but communications was a little slow in explaining to the non-farm consumer.
That's exactly right, and I think with the new technology that we're seeing with the gene editing, not the transgenic type of genes, I'm hoping we can develop and communicate a better story to tell so the mothers and the fathers or those preparing food for their family will understand that this is a safe food that they can confidently put on their children's and their family's table and consume without any concern at all.
Mr. Secretary, we've watched what's been happening with the hurricane, of course. We've seen people driving cattle. I mean, the water's been up to the bellies of the steers, and they're out there doing what they can to save their animals. Your agency has had a pretty dramatic response, too, has it not, on a variety of fronts to the hurricane?
It has, and it will have even more. Obviously, the FEMA has the first responsibilities over human life and rescue, search and rescue, and we don't try to get in their way until the things recede. First of all, we couldn't do an adequate census or assessment of all the damages there. But USDA will come right in now. We already have people in the APHIS, Animal Plant Inspection Help Division. We've got food safety looking at processors there whose refrigerators, freezers may have been off. And there we've got our animal welfare people with APHIS there. So there are a number of places. Obviously, when people are able to get their FSA offices, we're going to have a lot of demand regarding claims at our FSA offices, our NRCS helping to rebuild some of these fields and farms there from a natural conservation standpoint. There's big challenges. Most of our work is ahead. We've been down there. Our people really came in ahead of time, prepared. The good news is virtually all of our people are accounted for, and that's a great thing. So they're willing to come in and to help, just like all Americans. You look at this, this is when America's best at its best.
Did you have any idea when you took this job that you'd have to shoulder so much of it by yourself that you wouldn't have more team members in place by this date, people like Ted McKinney and others?
I had no idea that except Labor Day of the first year that I'd be the only Senate-confirmed person at USDA. I think that's a tragedy, and I wish that we could proceed quicker, particularly in these transition times. We've got a lot of mission areas, and I need help of leadership there. The good news about it is we have great career staff there that knows what they're doing. They're professionals, and they've carried on the work. But we still need in the transformation, in the reformation process, in the vision for leadership going forward, or how we're going to do better, faster, easier, quicker service for our customers. We need a team of leadership there. We've identified, you mentioned one, some great people there. You got Steve Sinsky with American Soybean Association, nominated to be deputy. I need him, 2 months ago or 3 months ago. And we've got Ted McKinney as our nominated as Undersecretary of Trade. I want him out here on the Million Mile Club right away, knocking on doors all across this planet, determining where we can sell more U.S. ag products.
One final question. What is the biggest surprise that has come your way since becoming Secretary of Agriculture?
Final question. I'm having too much fun, Orrin. You're going to make me quit. Actually, I think a surprise has been in D.C., we've constructed a system of checks and balances that sort of slug the system from time to time. It develops into a mother may I environment. Being a former governor and executive leadership, I could make decisions and implement them and do that. We've got so many legal, regulatory checks and balances there that make it somewhat demoralizing to reform. You may remember the little dust-up we had about rural development. We would not have a rural development leader now if I'd waited for a Senate-confirmed leader. I've got Ann Hazlett in there, a Midwest girl from Indiana, that knows what she's doing. She's great in that space. She's already making transformative changes in rural development and helping to lead this interagency task force on rural prosperity. And so these kind of people are needed, but it's so much of a check and balance system there where you have to notify her, you have to work so many days to do this, you have to wait 180 days to do that. I was really stunned when they told me for rules and regulations over what we do, it'd be like 18 months. I said, I'm from the private sector. I'm a sooner rather than later guy. Let's get it done. We can't wait to harvest the crop in 18 months.
As I said early in the program, I like him, and this is certainly meant as a compliment. He's a good old down-home boy who knows agriculture and who knows politics. A pleasure visiting with Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue. We'll take a look at agricultural market activity when we continue on the market sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need. Today, and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Again, we remind you that it's a long holiday weekend, a three-day weekend, and who knows what'll happen weather-wise, who knows what'll happen in the world tense areas. That's what keeps markets as interesting and sometimes as frustrating as they are. But as we take a look at what we're facing next week agriculturally in the markets, we ended the day today in livestock trade at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange with cattle futures mostly higher, end of the week short covering, following a decline to nine-month lows on Thursday. Futures, however, are certainly anchored by plentiful supplies of market-ready cattle and weak cash markets as fed cattle in the U.S. plains this week traded about $1 to $2 lower than a week ago per hundredweight. Rich Nelson, chief strategist with Allendale, said it still looks like we have a few weeks of pressure left in front of us in September with rising cattle numbers seasonally. He said next week we'll have a push of higher cattle numbers available for packers to buy. And I think this market is bracing for this next round of lower prices. And so that's what happened in cattle, and that certainly has been an up-and-down market. Now, the lean hog trade at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange settled mostly higher today. Expectations for a seasonal increase in packer demand as they fill orders this month for National Pork Month features in October. And keep in mind that markets, or that the processors and the markets will be shutting down on Monday for the Labor Day holiday. So where will we start trading on Tuesday in livestock? The October lean hog contract will start at $61.45 a hundredweight, basically unchanged today. The October live cattle contract will start at $105.15 after losing 32 cents a hundredweight today, but the rest of the months in cattle futures were higher. And then the September feeder cattle contract unchanged today. So it'll start trading at Tuesday at $142.72. Then the grain market. Grain market looking ahead to the September crop report, and it's become tradition that ahead of those crop reports from USDA, a lot of firms and analysts issue their numbers. But one of the surveys that we do watch carefully every year, because they have been found to be pretty much on target, and that's the survey by Allendale, based in McHenry, Illinois. Their survey, where they interviewed producers in 32 states, was conducted from August 16 through the 30th. So that'll give us a read right up to a day or so ago. And so here's what their numbers were saying. The survey put soybean yield at 47.1 bushels per acre. And that would put soybean production at 4,179,000,000 bushels. The Allendale survey put corn yield at 166.7 bushels per acre, and that would give us a corn crop of the 13,920,000,000 bushels. And as I say, they've been pretty close on their forecast. It's interesting, if you go into the monthly figures, they're looking at some lower numbers in Iowa, Illinois, 181 bushels per acre, Indiana, 168 bushels per acre, Wisconsin, 159 bushels per acre, and it looks like that 181 bushels per acre of the Iowa-Illinois corn-growing area. No, take it back. Minnesota is at 185 bushels per acre. So that's what Allendale is looking at. And, of course, the September crop report will be out the 12th day of September, so that will be a week from tomorrow that we get the numbers in that report. Informa came out with its projection on the 2017 crop. Soybeans, 49.4 bushels per acre, with a crop of 4,384,000,000. As Informa has a September corn yield of 169.2 bushels per acre and a crop of 14,123,000,000 bushels. That's according to Informa. F.C. Stone came in with these numbers, raising the estimate of the 2017 corn yield to 166.9 bushels per acre. That would be up from 162.8 in its previous monthly report. And the firm raised its corn production estimate to 13,939,000,000 bushels. So, as I say, you're getting all sorts of these coming out before the crop report comes out. And I guess you can take your pick, but be careful, because it may be a lot different in other parts of the world or in other parts of the country than it is on your farm. So Tuesday, where do we start? Well, we're going to start the September wheat crop at $4.20.5 a bushel. That's up 11.5 cents. There's news of a virus hitting the Kansas wheat crop that could cause a major decline in wheat production in Kansas. So that's one of the reasons we saw the 11.5 cent a bushel increase today. But taking a look now at the corn market, when we start trading on Tuesday, December corn will be at $3.55 a bushel after dropping 3 cents a bushel today. And the November soybean numbers starting at $9.49.5 a bushel on Tuesday after dropping a nickel today. So that's kind of a rundown on what happened this week before the what some people call the end of the summer holiday season. We look ahead, of course, to Husker Harvest Days in Grand Island, Nebraska. That's coming up September 12, 13, and 14 in Grand Island, and a lot of other activity yet during the month. Thank you for joining us. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.